Hello and welcome to Theatre Voice. I'm Ella Parry-Davies and today I'm talking to Cassie Bradley and Penny Newell. Cassie Bradley is an actor with the National Theatre, currently performing in Sam Mendes' King Lear. Penny Newell is, like me, a PhD researcher in the arts at King's College London. And we're here today to talk about the role of academic research in arts and culture today. What insight can academics offer to the cultural sector? Or should we stop thinking about academics as the sources of insight and expertise altogether? Are publics or artists interested in what researchers have to say about the arts? And how can we open up dialogues and collaborations between universities and the real world of art production? If so, what do those dialogues offer in return to research and scholarship? Together, Penny and I have spent 7 months on a quest to find out more about how young researchers in the arts and humanities can be present in public discussions about arts and culture in the UK. We wanted to take research out of the library and the lecture hall and discover a more vibrant and engaging way to think creatively, critically, and rigorously about what's going on stages, in venues, and at festivals today. Academics are currently under a lot of pressure from the powers that be to prove what impact their work is having outside of higher education and teaching. In a sense, the dialogues that naturally occur in research have become targets and outcomes that have to be measurable for quality control. This has left a bitter taste in the mouth of many academics, and the debate has become fiercely polarised around an opposition between the intrinsic value of the humanities versus outcries of elitism and navel-gazing. But I feel this is a really unhealthy binary to rely on. Is there more to being an engaged academic than the impact rhetoric? Amongst all this antagonism, is there a third way? Penny and I devised a conference called Research with Reach in the attempt to get to the bottom of these questions. We invited professionals from across academia, publishing, journalism, and festivals to share their perspectives with young researchers. We since formed a network and a forum for discussion, which you can find via the links below. But to get the ball rolling in this debate, I'd like to ask you, Cassie, what role academic research plays in your everyday work? Is it present in rehearsals or performance? And more to the point, is it useful to you?
Well, I think it's really useful. And I think it's kind of a huge field that I think a lot of actors would kind of tap into or people would use without actually sometimes even knowing it when you're kind of researching a part or the debates that do come up in a rehearsal room. But I do think actually there's a kind of a perspective or an impression that maybe the rehearsal room is separate from the academic lecture hall or academic papers, where there's kind of, they don't see a crossover really. It's kind of those papers don't really impact upon the live kind of process of theatre making, which I think is a really kind of erroneous distinction to make. I think there's a lot of crossover, but I think it's about how we look at it rather than kind of the binary opposition that people have set up.
So in a way, do you think the question is kind of not that useful? Do you think maybe we should be asking a different question, which is that where is that place where the rehearsal room and academia already meet, rather than asking how are specialists informing your practice? How do you think, how would you perhaps classify yourself as a researcher, as an actor? Do you think you're a researcher in a way? Like, you know, what kind of activities do you think you've undertaken that would perhaps qualify you as a researcher as much as we might?
Yeah, I think actually there's, if you charted kind of the process of research from an academic and an actor, it'd be quite similar in a way, because as soon as you get a part, you delve into the life of the play, you start researching the background, where that person comes from, in issues that impact upon them. So I did a TV drama called Suspects, and I played a female soldier that just came back from Afghanistan. And I did a load of research about, soldiers in the field, about how it impacts their families. I read, I went through so many letters that soldiers write home. And so in a way, it's quite similar to kind of that first round academic approach where you gather all your source material and you search through it. And so actually, yeah, I think it is potentially the question that actually, how can you perceive actors maybe in a more academic framework, or how can you perceive academics and maybe an actor's framework? Because kind of acting is based on action and about, you know, what moves us and what is what makes us tick as humans. And that's precisely what academics are engaged in.
It's a false distinction as well for academics to set themselves up in this kind of ivory tower where we become these disembodied voices on, you know, academic papers or podcasts or something like that. And actually, you know, we're working in the world and we're subject to the same kind of relationships and empirical encounters that the actors are or that any other cultural practitioners are.
Actually,
I wanted to ask you where you came across those letters. Where do you, I mean, when you're doing this kind of research, is it academics who come into the rehearsal room? Is it you going out to look, you know, do you go to the library? Do you go to archives? How do you come across this kind of information?
Well, I think it varies from actor to actor, and it would, as a rehearsal, so you've got the work that you do as an actor, in your own room before you come into the rehearsal room or alongside rehearsals. And then you've got the director-led rehearsals in the room. And that framework will be dictated by the director and the company. So if a company has a particular focus on a specific... If they're a director that love to use research or rely more heavily on kind of academic papers, then they might bring it in. But actually, it is down to you as an actor. So I go to the library, I research online, kind of going through different archives. I found those letters. There was a news article that was about some of the recent soldiers that had died in conflict. Use all the tools you've got. I had a friend in the army, so I spoke to him.
So would you perhaps see performing a role as kind of a platform for disseminating the research that you've put into that role? Maybe that's perhaps a way for us to start rethinking how we think of academic papers as the only way that we can kind of put the information out there. Because you're working with materials, as we do. And as you say, you're having this similar creative process. We are trying to draw up links and connections and think about how they all come together and build a narrative. So in a way, when you perform in a performance or when you get up on stage, that's very much akin to when an academic might publish a paper. And I imagine it's fraught with the same nervousness.
That's an amazing parallel. I'd never really thought about it in those terms, but actually now that you've mentioned it, yeah, absolutely. I think it's more about it's about the truth of a performance. When you get up there, you have to trust that all of that research, all of the rehearsal processes that you've gone through are there. And you've got to play that moment to moment as if you're living it, it's a live experience in front of that audience. But yeah, that's exact, you could draw a parallel with an academic giving a paper in that is the platform. And, you know, both fields are, if you look at the kind of why academics research and why you publish papers and why actors act and why theatre, why we put on what the purpose of art, it's about truth and it's about... moving people, and it's about drawing attention to specific issues, be that a child with autism or a hard-hitting drama about kind of frontline battle situation or a play about the NHS. They're all forums for discussion and debate, and I think actually a lot of exciting debate takes place in the interval discussions over ice cream or in the toilets of the theatre when people come out of that space and talk about, what actors moved them or the issues that come up in live performance.
Mm. Another thing I wanted to ask you about actually was criticism. Do theatre makers and audiences appreciate a researched approach to theatre reviewing, or does that kind of smack of this snobbish discourse that demands that audiences have some kind of prior knowledge of the performance? I mean, as someone who myself writes about theatre and performance, Theatre Voice was actually one of my first ports of call in thinking about platforms that existed between academia and kind of more mainstream publishing, because it is a research space. It was set up to see if theatre could be talked about in this new kind of more expansive, more discursive way, giving both critics and theatre makers actually a bit more space and time to talk about their work. But platforms like this aren't really common in the UK. Mm. And I think especially in theatre, although that's kind of changing with digital and with online magazines.
Mm. Oh, I don't know. I think criticism, theatre criticism, was probably kind of an icy subject with a lot of actors, because I think how an individual actor approaches reviews and approaches criticism is very different. Kind of on King Lear, we didn't talk about the reviews as a company, because we didn't think that was, you know, we all sat down and decided that wasn't going to be helpful because to our performances. And I know that some actors never read any reviews ever. Some actors read their reviews when a performance is over and when their run's over. Some actors read all of them and wait in a car for the outside the news agents until the papers are published. And so I think it's a question of taste and a question of... But I do think there is immense value in I suppose, from my perspective, I would appreciate a kind of a thorough, more critical, kind of engaged with academic debate in terms of a review, rather than something commenting on the size of an actor or their suitability for a role. Or
I think, one of the arguments that comes up a lot in the kind of defence of the arts and humanities as a university discipline is that the institution of higher education kind of takes it away from the marketplace to an extent.
Mm.
And although obviously that's changing more and more with student fees and that kind of thing. But I think that, I was writing for Exeunt and we had a huge, what we called Star Wars, about whether we should give star ratings to shows or not.
Yeah.
And I think that part of that is this kind of, should you see it, should you not? Is it worth your money or not?
Yeah.
And actually, what Exeunt allowed us to do as critics was take our criticism away from that marketplace. And spend time reading about, really getting under the skin of what we were watching.
Mm.
And I think that's one of the benefits of an academic approach, of a research kind of reading, is that it's not just educational, it's not just informed, it's also critical, it's self-reflexive, it's creative.
Mm.
And those, I think, are the values that I would uphold of a kind of academic reading. Those are the things about the academy that are precious to me.
Mm. And it leads somewhere else. It can lead in another direction. A review is kind of a direct feedback loop, whereas I think a critical analysis of something will always open up new questions. And there's no reason that you can't be implicating kind of actors who are engaged in a certain performance or a staging of something in new openings of questions, because that may lead them to come back to the same performance with a new line of approach.
Yeah.
And I think it would be, it would be quite condescending to think that we couldn't write in those ways, asking, oh, what's at stake in something, as is the kind of big question always in performance studies, and that wouldn't kind of lead people who are working in the field to think about those kinds of issues. I think we often come to a review and think that we have to take a sort of really basic, superficial approach to something, whereas what we're trying to kind of, I guess, discuss here is implementing more of a model of critical, deep analysis, but on those sorts of platforms where you might find those superficial reviews.
Mm. Yeah, and it's interesting because, you know, a play is a living, breathing thing. You know, it varies from... That's what I love about theatre, is because it's a live event that will never happen again. That you can never, even though it's exactly the same lines, exactly the same set, exactly the same actors, it's different every night and you find new things and there's new discoveries, or you come off, you can never have a perfect performance. You know, you might be buzzing after one scene and then after another think, ooh, that wasn't quite so good. Or you might discover something about that relationship. So in that sense, a play changes throughout its run. You can see, I think, you know, with any of the productions I've been involved in, it evolves and morphs. And so actually to be engaged with that kind of critical review or looking at potential dialogues would actually be quite exciting for a company. I'm wondering whether you should do an experiment with a company of actors in which you kind of, it's almost the reviews that influence the performances and vice versa, and just seeing how that would kind of impact upon a certain production.
Well, I guess that's in a sense the role of the director, or we don't have so much of in the UK, but the dramaturg as well, who has that kind of researched and kind of reflexive role in that sense.
Yeah, you mentioned the word impact there, which brings us nicely to a point which kind of moving to the other side of the conversation, I guess, from our academic perspective, which kind of turns to our reasons for thinking through all of these questions and obviously for having this discussion today, which is the research excellence framework and this impact kind of rhetoric that they have at the moment. So the research excellence framework is kind of the framework for thinking, for the way it's a way of quantifying your research through the publications you bring out, the journal publications that you have in wide-reaching specialist journals, and it's also an aspect of it is about how you how your research has, through engaging the public, can be quantified in certain kind of impact terms and point scoring, and I think that's another thing perhaps that we can shift the conversation towards, which sustains this kind of binary that stops us being able to think about models where we might have researchers in a studio space that is at once also a rehearsal space, where we might think of acting as a form of research and the performance itself as a kind of publication. That kind of quantification of research through academia and the rhetoric that we're forced to function within, the discourses of academia, I think really puts a cap on how we can explore these models, these kind of creative mixed models.
Yeah, I think that one of the points that came across really strongly in the conversations we were having when devising the conference and since then was the idea that dialogue is something inherent to research, and we need to wrest it back from the research excellence framework. You know, it's become this kind of crystallised, reified word, impact. It's just a rhetoric now, it's empty, and it is all about literally point scoring. I mean, I heard a story the other day about an academic who had done some research that then went on to inform an exhibition in London. And the visitors to the exhibition had to fill out feedback forms and that kind of thing. And it turned out that 9 of the people who'd come to see it were single mothers who had absolutely loved it and said that it changed their life and were very positive about it. And the impact points that translated into was worth 14 monographs, 14 books. And it was as easy as that to translate those points and to compare and to quantify that data, that kind of hard data. So I think that something that's come out of our journey really is this sense that, you know, we can recuperate that. We can take back that sense of dialogue because it belongs to research and it always has done.
Well, I think that's the idea, isn't it? Just because the ref have created this idea of impact doesn't mean that they created the idea of public engagement. That's what we're saying. Public engagement was always already part of research because you engage with other people, you engage with thought, you engage with ideas, you engage with letters, primary materials, boxes of archives. That's engaging with people. That is engagement. There's always a kind of feedback in that. It's always a dialogue. And just because it's become quantified doesn't mean that it has to stop being thinkable within the terms of a dialogue.
Yeah, I think we were talking earlier, weren't we, about this kind of model of Newton's cradle in the sense that, you know, you make an impact, but it makes an impact back on you as well, and that's inescapable. And one of the speakers actually at the conference, Paolo Gabaldo, who's a lecturer at King's College London with us, he kind of mentioned this model of this image of academics at the source of knowledge and this knowledge kind of trickling down, which I find really problematic and which came up actually in a blog post on The Guardian by somebody called Wendy Earle, who I think is at Birkbeck, talking about how academic knowledge kind of filters through. And I find that really kind of disturbing as a model, because actually we're not at the source of knowledge. You know, knowledge is it's a network thing. It flows. It's a circulation of water, and we partake of that, but we don't create it.
Yeah.
And it's not, you know, it's not a one way direction.
It's all of these different ways of speaking about it that sustain this image of the ivory tower.
Mm.
If you have trickle down, then you create this image where we are depicted at the top and everything's flowing down to those minions surrounding the ivory tower, and who may or may not understand all of our very complex ideas.
Mm.
Whereas it's not realistically like that, even if you want to put it, like you say, in the kind of Newton's cradle, yes, every action has an equal reaction. Equally, every kind of flow of water, every trickle down, eventually comes back up. If we're putting it in the water cycle framework, which we've spoken about as well, it's about kind of breaking out of these ways of speaking about it. And I think that will pave the way for seeing, maybe not even creating these models that we're talking about. I mean, you're already a researcher as an actor.
Mm.
So we're actually just opening our eyes to the fact that it isn't a dichotomized binary. That actually just doesn't exist. It's just the language that we're forced to use to speak about it that's making it.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, actually, I think we should probably start wrapping up. But, you know, looking towards the future and towards the models that we might start kind of adopting to talk about research and to think about research outside of the academy, outside of those boxes of the rehearsal room, the library, the lecture hall. What are the things that we can do to move forward to that place? And I mean, obviously, with our training program, with our conference at King's, it's very much about equipping young researchers to think beyond the terms that exist within the academy, to think outside of those, and to look at public engagement, and to be equipped to deal with public engagement in a kind of fruitful and creative way. But I'd be interested to know from your perspective, Cassie, what could be in place in the cultural sector or within universities that would bring those conversations closer?
Well, I think looking at where there are connections and overlaps, so in actors' research, in looking at for potential kind of sparks of engagement, whether that be at the kind of the grassroots level when a production's coming together. And I think more and more, you know, we're looking towards the European model and looking towards dramaturgs. And so I think in that sense, theatre is moving towards that idea of kind of research and that relationship between the director's vision and the play text and looking through different frameworks there. But I also think in terms of the language that we speak about, looking kind of almost being wary of not academic language in a sense, but those binary oppositions that people can set up between kind of the public sphere and the academic sphere.
Mm.
Actually, there's so much overlap, and you know, you can't measure an idea, or you can't measure the, you know, in quotation marks, impact of a piece of art in a way. You'll never know all the kind of the tumbleweed effect that, you know, one painting or one piece of theatre can, that difference it can make. So I suppose not looking at it in terms of that hard data, or even the kind of the idea of hard and soft data, finding a different way to measure or engage with art, theatre, literary criticism as practices and as conversations and dialogues in their own right.
Yeah, I think, I mean, you mentioned actually a struggle that you'd had in Nottingham, where you, I mean, yeah, would you like to tell us?
Yeah, well, the Nottingham Playhouse just had all of its funding cut, basically. And I know that in a recession or in a financial crisis, you see the arts are always the first things to be cut because they're not deemed as important as frontline services such as kind of education or health. And whilst that's, you know, a huge, obviously I understand that, but at the same time I'd argue with it because, you know, theatre is a form of education. And I think often those key decisions are made because there's not enough, because people perceive data or research in terms of hard and soft data. So the effect of, you know, a child exposed to the poetry of Shakespeare for the first time, you can't measure that in terms of, you can't naturally create an effect between, you know, literacy rates in school. But I, you know, it goes towards it. You can't measure the effect that a community group would have on a group of young people, providing a forum for them to write about issues that shape their world. They're kind of deemed soft data rather than hard data, and that's why cuts kind of are put in place. So I think we need to rethink our models of thinking, really, and of speaking about it, because, you know, theatre, I would argue, theatre, the arts, is as essential as frontline services.
Thanks very much.